Cut the Fat Podcast is brought to you by Dr. Ray Heinisch, Blythe Allberg, and cutthefatpodcast.com. Right, hello everybody. I'm Dr. Ray Heinisch. I'm joined here with the Blythe Allberg. Hey Blythe, how are you?
I'm doing great. You know what? It is fantastic to hear our voices together again. I do have to say that.
We're back.
I think a lot of people would agree with that.
Yeah, and so hopefully we can keep these podcasts pumping out from here forward. You know, a lot of stuff was going on in your and my life, both professionally and personally. You know, I've got a couple of babies now, and you know, they're taking up a lot of time. A lot of things going on with the wellness center and the restaurant. You know, and all kinds of stuff going on in both the professional and personal life. So, you know, hopefully we can get back on the schedule of doing these things, right?
Yeah, yippee, yes.
And you started another podcast, right?
I have, and you know, I kind of the idea of starting my own podcast was to kind of carry the torch for you and I while you were busy. I totally know what it's like. I had three little ones at home all at once, and it's hard to find time to do something that requires quiet time, and podcasting is one of those things. So I think people will be very understanding, but I wanted to just kind of continue on and branch off a little bit. I've started some weight loss groups. Actually, I've been doing them for about a year now, but they started kind of locally, and to get like some fresh blood and people involved and to be able to reach out and help more people, I thought I would start doing my own podcast that kind of addressed some of the things that were happening in the weight loss group, some of the topics of conversation that were coming up that people really wanted to have answers to. So instead of putting all those things on hold, hoping that you and I could podcast together, I just sort of started doing it on my own.
I like it. And what I like about it is the fact that they are fairly laser focused. So, you know, they cover a topic like, you know, water, for example, mm-hmm. and you kind of dive deep into that. And I think that's great. It's got really good practical information that you can put into action right away, which I think a lot of people do need. So
yeah.
It's called
Fit Life with Blythe, and it is on iTunes. I'm actually having an app built right now where you can have the app, and then you can get my YouTube videos. You can get I've got some workout videos, recipes, and things like that, and the podcast, and a couple of other things that I've got in the works, all under one roof. So if you download that app, you'll be able to find all those things. But that's to come a little bit later in the year, maybe June or July.
Very good, very good. And I wish I had a name that I could like make into a catchy podcast, you know, maybe Fit Day with Ray.
Hey! Oh my God, I love it.
I sat and thought about that one for a while, you know.
Okay.
Hopefully. Okay, so anyway, let's jump into the podcast for today. Okay, so today's podcast is titled How to Start Over. And the premise is this, Blythe. It's if someone were to walk up to us and ask us, how do I start fresh? If they said, okay, look, I've tried a lot of stuff. I've lost some weight, but I've gained it all back. And I'm tired of running this hamster wheel of weight loss. I want to hit the reset button. How should I start fresh? So that's kind of the premise of today's podcast.
Okay.
You know, and I want to start by saying that we don't truly believe in this whole concept of starting over, do we, Blythe?
No, not necessarily, because I feel like it's a forever ongoing learning process. And you find what works for you and you find what doesn't work for you. And along that journey, you find out what type of person you are. Maybe you're an all or nothing person. Maybe you're a baby step type person. If you know what type of person you are, then forming the perfect formula for you will come in the same form as that.
Right. And, you know, we feel like at any given point there is stuff we're doing right and stuff we're doing wrong. In fact, those words, right and wrong, probably aren't the right words, are they? It's better to say there are things that we're doing that are causing us to store fat and things that we're doing that are causing us to burn fat. And if you're not satisfied with the results that you're getting, it's because you're doing things or you're taking actions that are promoting more fat storing than fat burning.
Right. And I think a lot of times people focus on fat burning, whereas their focus maybe should be shifted to not storing fat.
Right. And I think, you know, a lot of people, they come to us and say, I think my metabolism is broken. Mm-hmm. And I think I have a slow metabolism. But then when I test them on an indirect calorimeter, which is a machine that assesses how many calories they're burning on a daily basis, it doesn't show a slow metabolism. So it's not the fact that they're having a problem burning fat. The problem is they're storing too much fat. And it's a subtle distinction, but mm-hmm. it's an important one. If you think about it, when you think in terms, is this action going to cause me to burn fat or store fat? You start seeing things a little bit differently, right? You see things that ascend your thinking way past calories. For example, does drinking more water promote fat loss? Does your sleeping habits or do your sleeping habits come into play? Do they impact your fat loss? Mm-hmm. You see, the thinking becomes much more sophisticated when you start thinking in terms of is my action resulting in fat storing or fat burning, right?
Right. So, and I think that's an awesome thought just for a lot of people. I mean, that's a golden nugget for sure.
I mean, and why are we leading with this? Well, because as I stated earlier, you know, we never want to throw out your current weight loss approach in its totality because there are positive aspects of your current lifestyle. You just need to kind of tip the scales a touch in favor of fat burning rather than fat storing, right? So if we can just tip those scales a little bit, all of a sudden you've got momentum heading in the right direction. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
So it's kind of a long-winded way of saying tweak your current lifestyle. Don't just toss it out and start again. You know, we talk about that a lot. We talk about the CATA approach, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which stands for commit to a program, assess your results, tweak that program, and then assess again, and then just repeat that process over mm-hmm. and over again. All right?
And eventually, you will come up with the perfect formula.
Exactly. And so, assuming that you're subscribed to this belief that starting over in its truest sense is for the birds, let's go ahead and just continue that thought experiment. And imagine that you, let's say Blythe, that somebody walks up and they actually say, you know what? You tell me how to start over. Okay. What do we tell them?
I would say, number one, think about what you are currently doing. So what is your current diet like and what would you change? And I would ask to hear back from that person what they think they need to change. Okay, so what they actually know about themselves, if they say, well, you know, I've been eating a candy bar every night after dinner, I would say that would be your first step. Just cut that candy bar out every night because you already know that you're kind of pushing your own limits. Number two would be drink more water. And you want me to keep going like in the order where I would start?
You kind of got me thinking though, you know.
Okay.
During our hiatus, I've really been thinking a lot about the trajectory of the weight loss industry, right? Mm-hmm. And you want to know what the conclusion was that I came up with?
What?
I think that weight loss psychology is where I feel most people need to focus on. You know, I love the biochemistry of fat loss. I know you do as well. And you like the really the hardcore in the trenches lifestyle type things that you do on a regular basis. You know, the types of things that you like, the drinking of the water, for example. Mm-hmm. People don't think about stuff like that, but it's a right. very important factor.
Yes.
But knowing what to do to trigger lasting weight loss means nothing if you don't know how to get yourself to do it, right?
Okay.
And more importantly, do it with a smile, meaning enjoy the process, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that that's where a lot of people go wrong. They think that if I'm going on to start a weight loss journey, it's going to suck, and that's just the way it's got to be. But the reality is that you not only have to teach yourself how to get yourself to do the things that you know you already need to do, but you got to learn how to enjoy that process. Because we as human beings don't stick to, we don't stick to programs that suck, right?
Right. So fighting it tooth and nail the whole way, scratching your way, you know, through that process. Right. That's not going to be helpful. It's going to prolong what you're trying to do. You're actually working against yourself.
Yeah, people mentally wake up every morning mm-hmm. With white knuckles, right?
Yes.
They think, I just got to fight my way through this day. If I can just get through this day, I can do the whole thing over tomorrow. But, you know, fights, you and I were texting about mixed martial arts, you know, because mm-hmm. I, over the last nine months or so, started doing Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, which is a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And
yes,
and you've done MMA. You've done MMA training as well before, right?
And I loved every minute of it. Yes. You made me, like, you lit a little fire in me when you told me about that.
Oh, are you going, are you going to go back?
Yeah, I would love to. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's something I really, really enjoy.
Oh my God, yes, it's so much fun. But guess what? It's also exhausting. Fighting is exhausting. And the same thing happens when we get out of bed and we try to white knuckle our way through life. By the end of the day, we're wiped out. We wonder why. It's because we've been fighting all day long, fighting against advertisements, fighting against the coworker who brought donuts, fighting against all these different things. And by the end of the day, we're just wiped out from all of the food decisions that we have to make. Going back to the whole point of enjoying the process, I think that if somebody were to walk up to me and they were to say, what do I need to do? I think the first question out of my mouth would be, how do you define success?
Okay.
How do you define success? And what got me thinking about this was when you started talking about the whole, you know, candy bar issue and, mm-hmm. and you know, doing the things, doing the small things, right?
Yeah.
What you're talking about isn't entirely just removing a bunch of or removing everything in your life that you enjoy, right? That's not what you're talking about.
Absolutely not. No.
But that's unfortunately what happens when people define success entirely by the scale. You know, if success is only defined by how much weight you're losing, mm-hmm. well then what you've got to do to achieve that quote unquote weight loss is go out and just remove all the good stuff out of your life. And it's like what was that guy's name that did the juicer? Jack LaLanne.
Okay.
Jack LaLanne. Okay. He said, you know, you want to know the secret to losing weight? It's if it tastes good, spit it out, right?
Okay.
And,
yes.
And there's kind of some truth to that in a sense that I think a lot of us do eat in such a way that down regulates the taste buds. So when we make the shift to a healthier lifestyle, stuff doesn't taste as good as it should. And that does change. Your taste buds do change. They do sensitize again once you make a shift towards the positive.
You just took the words out of my mouth because this is a conversation I have with one of my clients daily that has like over 50 pounds to lose. And she's continuously stepping on the scale, knowing that it's not going to say what she wants it to say. And then it ruins the day. And well, I guess I have to have more nasty food. So it's the whole attitude. It takes a total attitude adjustment to be able to give it 100%.
Right, which is why I want people to really redefine success around confidence, not weight. And so
yes.
When I say confidence, there are basically three areas of confidence that I want people to focus on. I want them to focus on the confidence with how they look. Now, it's a little bit taboo to say that, right? Because people don't want to feel like how you look is important, but it is. And it's the number one reason why people seek out weight loss pros, right? Because
yes.
They want to improve the way they look. And there's nothing wrong with that.
No, not at all, because that helps with the self-confidence.
And the next one is confidence with how you feel. So you mm-hmm. need to know that tomorrow when you get out of bed, you're going to have the confidence to do the things that you want, the energy. You're going to have the energy to do the things that you want to do, that you want to achieve in your life. If you have that confidence that you can wake up every morning with a ton of energy, how does that change your life? It changes your life dramatically, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Because what's one of the most common complaints of people that you meet who are looking to lose weight?
They don't like the way they look. And they don't like the way their clothes fit. They don't like the way they feel.
They don't like their energy levels, right? Mm-hmm. So they don't like the way they feel. So if you could have confidence that every single day you wake up, you'll feel great, you'll feel energetic, bam, that is something to look forward to, right?
Absolutely. And I think people find that out as they begin the journey. Most people start to feel better, even just if it's increasing your water intake. You know, they do start to feel more energized. But for whatever reason, and maybe you can answer this, why does society gravitate toward that damn number on the scale? What is it about that number, that wretched number?
The problem is it's the lazy approach to measure success.
Yes. Okay.
And it's a horrible way to measure success.
I reiterate that all the time, but a lazy way is a great way to put it.
Well, let me just revamp that. I'll say that you certainly can use weight as one measure of success. You just can't define success by your weight, right? So you
want to
define it by the confidence that you feel, how confident you are with how you look, how you feel. And then the third one is your health. How confident are you that you're not going to have a heart attack tomorrow?
Right.
How confident are you that you're not going to have a stroke?
And you're going to build that confidence every day as long as you stick with the program.
Right. And that's something you can measure as well. You can measure your insulin levels. You can measure your blood glucose. You can measure your cholesterol levels. And, you know, those are all things that we can look at on a lab sheet and say, we're seeing improvements in these things.
Yes.
So, you know, once you have that confidence that you're going to be able to dance at your daughter's wedding, for example, or your son's wedding 10, 20, 30 years from now, that is something, I mean, that's capital that you can spend, right? I mean, that is something that you can feel that actually makes your life, enriches your life. And that's what we're looking to achieve when we redefine how we define success around weight loss. You know, we talk about weight loss, losing weight, and so the scale becomes the tool that we use. But what about the more important factors, the reason, the why behind the why? I mean, you want to lose weight, but why? Why do you want to lose weight? Well, I want to lose weight so I look better in clothes. Well, why do you want to look better in clothes? Because I don't feel confident when I go out. Mm-hmm. You know, why don't you feel confident? And so you just follow that why down to its core. And that's where you'll find the true long-term motivation. And the reason I bring this up is because I'm tired of people defining success by the scale and feeling crappy even after they lose weight. You know,
just because the number isn't what they think the number should be. And I'll tell you this, Ray, the number is never good enough. So even if you achieve 48 out of the 50 pounds that you wanted to lose, well, now you're not confident maybe in the way you look in your clothes. That confidence just shifts a little bit. So you do have to find the reason behind the why.
Yeah. And you've spent a lot of time in the fitness competitor world. Mm-hmm. How confident are some of the girls that you've competed with?
Very, very low. Confidence levels are very, very low. And, you know, I just did a podcast on this on Fit Life with Blythe about relationships with food. And it's unfortunate that whole bodybuilding industry is really attractive to people who are very insecure or very unconfident with the way their body looks. And it kind of becomes an obsession.
Absolutely. I think that's the best way to put it. And even with that obsession, even with those levels of results where they're standing up on stage in a very small bikini, showing themselves off to the world, which is great, which is fine. Mm-hmm. But even with that, they still feel low self-esteem, don't they?
Because that they're not fix the problem, right?
They always want to lose a little bit more. They always want to get, you know, just a little bit thinner,
a little bit firmer,
you know,
a little bit tighter.
More tone,
I wish I had more abs. I wish I had bigger arms. And the list goes on and on.
And that's because they're using kind of these external things. They're using their body fat percentage. They're using their weight. They're using those things as as measures. Whereas a lot of the real true measures that will result in long-term results is going to be the internal things, what we call the internal locus of control, the things that you control, not the things that the outside world controls and says looks out at you and says, you know, you're good because of this, right? Because you've got abs, because you're 5% body fat. You know, that's not what ultimately will bring happiness to your life. It's the internal stuff, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, continuing along the path of how we redefine success, here are a few of the key characteristics of success around body change. First, your new fat loss program should build you up as a person, not tear you down. You know, if confidence is our goal, our fat loss program should be built around increasing our confidence, not around guilt and shame, right, Blythe? Mm-hmm.
Right, absolutely. People who feel guilty, I feel like what I achieve best with my clients is allowing them to feel comfortable, not just comfortable with themselves, but comfortable with our relationship, comfortable with how they are is okay. The way they are now is okay. We just want to enhance that. We want to, you know, shine a bright light on the things that they're really good at. And shifting the focus from the uncertainty of themselves helps them explore something that maybe they're already good at, but they they really don't focus on that because they're already good at it. So they don't put too much energy toward that. So rather than taking things away from their life, I try to add things that will enhance them. And it makes them a happier person, a little more confident. And what do you know? It ends in weight loss.
Yeah, it's like they change on the inside before they change on the outside.
Yes.
And I've
yes.
seen that a thousand times before. It is a key characteristic of somebody who ultimately goes on to have long-term success.
Yes.
So next, we should decide now that a successful fat loss program will allow us to enjoy the process. Now, that doesn't mean that we can go out and eat every carb in sight. It just means that we'll determine to enjoy the weight loss journey because we're growing as a person.
Mm-hmm.
The weight loss journey isn't some sort of purgatory for us to atone for our dietary and weight loss or fitness sins.
That's right.
It's a frontier, really, isn't it? It's about exploring the nooks and crannies of our character and then building upon that. Because, you know, when we start to say, and you made mention of this previously when you talked about how the process of, you know, a truly good program shines light on the talents of the person, shines mm-hmm. light on who they are truly. And I think, unfortunately, oftentimes a lack of fitness, the lack of confidence that comes along with that prevents people from doing the things that they're meant to do.
Right.
It prevents them from pursuing the things that they really want to enjoy, right? I remember in one of the weight loss group classes, somebody who wanted to go to, I couldn't remember if it was Greenland or Iceland, one of those, and ride horses. That was like a dream of hers. And she had decided that she could not go to Greenland to ride horses because she was too heavy. And she thought that that the horse may not be able to carry her. And I asked her a simple question. You know, one time she came in and I think it was snowing, and she was the only one who showed up for the class because it was snowing. And I sat down with her and I had a conversation with her. And the question I asked her is, you know, why haven't you ridden horses in Greenland yet? You have the money? Yeah, I have the money. Mm-hmm. You have the time? Yeah, I have the time. Why haven't you done it? And she explained, well, I don't think the horses could hold me.
Oh.
And I said to her, well, how do you know? And she didn't have an answer for that. And I said, mm-hmm. you know, Anthony Robbins, Tony Robbins, if you know who he is, yeah. big teeth, the banana hands, you know, the big
yes.
guy, the big motivational speaker, you know, he plays polo. You know, he's enormous. He's like 7 foot. And he's an enormous person, an enormous character. And horses can carry him, I told her. And it was like a light in her head went off. And
yes.
from that moment on, she started making major progress with her weight loss goals. So it's just an indication that your weight loss program really needs to build you up. And if it doesn't, even if you achieve your weight loss goals, it's not a success.
Right. And we don't want to view them as a punishment. I think a lot, you know, this is why I address the question of relationship with food, because switching from, you know, like carb-loaded, sugar-loaded, yummy-tasting foods, yummy for now tasting foods that are going to detriment your health versus choosing foods that you know are going to be healthy for you that still taste good. It just might take a little time to warm back up to them. You know, it doesn't have to be viewed as a punishment. You have to remember that you're making a healthy choice for yourself. And I think a lot of people say, okay, well, I'm starting a new fitness regimen. I'm going to start on Monday and I'm going to, you know, load up with all the junk I can because it's going to be treacherous come Monday. So it's almost like they view it as a punishment from the very beginning. And that sort of sabotages your efforts from the get-go.
Right. And in fact, that's one of my points of redefining success.
Mm-hmm.
A successful program is guilt-free.
Yes.
If you lose 100 pounds and you're nothing but a toned up blob of guilt, then that's a failure to me. That's not a success, at least by our definition.
Right.
And
yeah.
Given enough time, that guilt will sabotage those results mm-hmm. and you will gain that weight back. So a successful program absolutely does not rely on guilt.
That's right. You need to get rid of that part right now, which if you can find something else, something positive to focus on, maybe you can move past that guilt, or at least if you can recognize it. You know, sometimes recognizing that you're feeling that way is half the battle.
Yes. And once you're recognizing it, accepting the fact that you're no longer tolerating that, because
yeah.
that's what most weight loss programs are built on, guilt. And it is the carbs to the brain.
Yes.
And the self-esteem. Guilt is the carbs to the brain and the self-esteem. Yes. And that's why it's so important. And then, you know, next we need to focus on getting strong and not skinny. And that means strong in body and strong in mind. And yes. I talked about the psychology of weight loss previously. I think it is so hugely important. We've got to learn to develop mental strength. And in addition to body strength, right? Speak to the difference between skinny and strong. You know, you see that cliche, I don't know what they call them, but viral messages on Facebook where it says strong is the new skinny. And,
yes.
Yeah, it's cliche, but it's kind of true. It's, skinny is no longer what we're aiming for. What we're aiming for is actually getting stronger, getting more fit, getting more metabolically active, building our energy levels. And all that is around building strength, not skinny, not just losing weight.
Right, to become a skinnier version of what you already are. Right. We want to gear that toward health and fitness and wellness. And all of that does come with building the strength. That's what's going to continue on and make it a long-term success.
All right, good. So finally, by the time you achieve your goals, you had better have a life full of healthy things rather than just a life devoid of the fat-provoking things. I mean, do you see the difference? We're not just removing stuff out of our life like carbs and sodas
sugars
and things like that, and sugars and so forth.
Yeah.
But we need to start adding things back in simultaneously that build our health up.
Absolutely. And, you know, back to the first sentence that you just said, you know, by the time we reach our goals, we're already setting new ones. So it's important to think ahead so that when you're eating a pear instead of a candy bar, that you're remembering that this is, you know, you're like paying it forward for the future.
Right. So for every fat-provoking thing that you remove from your life, determine to add one health-building thing, right?
There you go. That's a great way to put it.
It's an action step. It's something tangible that you can actually apply to your life. If you remove carbs from breakfast, then add protein. If you remove juice from your diet, add water or unsweetened green tea. Just don't leave the void. And I think all too often people do that. They leave the void, and guess what comes back?
Well, you always feel like something's missing. So then it comes right back. You've got to fill the void.
And what's going to come back? All the stuff that you were used to. All the stuff, you know, the candy bars,
the
ice cream, the habitual things, right? So you do need to fill the void with something healthy. Okay?
Simple.
All right, so enough with the intangible stuff. Let's get into the practical stuff. Now, Blythe, I don't know if you'd agree with me on this one, but I've really thought this one through a lot and experimented with it. And to me, it proves to be true almost 100 out of 100 times. And that's this. And you may disagree with it. It's okay if you do. If you're starting over, start with interval training. And let me explain why. Now, I can imagine some of you are screaming at your MP3 player saying, "Are you crazy? I'm ridiculously out of shape. I can't do interval training." And I'd venture to say that if you are, in fact, that out of shape, then all exercise is interval training, right? Because you have to, even if you're just able to walk for 10 steps and then you have to sit down, well, guess what you're doing when you're sitting down?
That's a form of interval training.
It's a form of interval training.
I was going to say, there are so many levels of interval training that totally makes sense to me. I actually agree with you on that.
Right. And let me tell you why. Because a lot of people, when you talk to a lot of weight loss experts, they almost always start with diet. But diet is a very complex thing, isn't it? There's food everywhere. We have to, you know, how many carbs do we eat? How much fat? How many calories? What types of foods do we include? Which ones do we remove? There's so much to it.
So much confusion, too. So much information that just kind of overlaps each other. And it just becomes like a big fog.
Right. And so with interval training, even if it's something as simple as interval walking, where you're walking fast and slow, I mean, if we want to clear things up for people, by now in this podcast, you already know what interval training is. But to put it in a nutshell, it's moving fast and slow. It's alternating between fast and slow activity. So high intensity and low intensity activity. And there's something that happens when you do it in the right way that actually changes the hormones in the body. It changes the receptors on the cells. It makes your body want to let go of fat, and it helps your body prevent the storage of fat. So it's not just movement, but it's movement that changes the hormones in such a way that sets you up for success with weight loss.
And that is the golden nugget. Rewind and listen to that sentence again. That's absolutely why I am so into the high intensity interval training. Now, because it paves the way for not just fat loss, but more dialed in fat storage, or less minutes lived with fat storage.
Right. And here's the big thing. This is why I think it's the best place to start, is because, you know, if we were to cut carbs starting right now, and, you know, we were to, you know, start living our life in a fairly low carb fashion, it may take 3-4 days, maybe longer, for the body to really uptick that fat burning process, just based on cutting carbs, cutting starches, cutting sugar. But if I were to put you through an interval training session right now, instantly you're going to turn on the fit genes, and you're going to start turning off the fat genes. And people don't realize, but you can impact positively how your genes are expressed. You can turn genetics on or off. We call it epigenetics, and we've talked about it in the past on this podcast. But the reality is, interval training and exercise in general, especially high intensity exercise, shifts your metabolism instantly in favor of fat loss. So nothing works as quickly as that.
And you know what? That's simple. It's cut and dry. It is what it is. There's no like fogginess. I mean, that's something you can go and do right now.
Right. And it's fast. So that's what I would recommend if somebody were asking me, well, what's the first thing that I should do? What's the first tangible step I should take? I would say do some sort of interval training, because you'll instantly shift your metabolism in a positive way. Whereas the dietary changes are acquired and learned. And I don't recommend weight training as the first step either, because it takes time to learn how to manage yourself in a gym. It takes time to learn how to lift weights in the right way. It takes time to build a weightlifting program that fits your lifestyle, your frame, fits your way of doing things. But interval training is simple. You don't need any equipment. You don't need to go out and get a gym membership. You can just put your shoes on and go walking fast and slow. And then you can take it up to jogging and walking. And then you can take it to sprinting and walking. So it's a very easy to implement process. It doesn't require any special equipment, any special training. Anybody can do it, even people who can only walk from the first bench in the park to the second bench in the park.
Right.
You know, so anybody can do it. So that's what I would say would be step number one.
Okay, I love that.
Step number two, I would say, would be to begin the process of focusing on brain food, not stomach food. So you want to start the process of learning how to build habits, how to build the right habits in your life, how to improve your follow through, how to improve your self-esteem. So while you're doing these interval sessions, or while you're doing these exercise sessions, and you know, maybe you're throwing some walking into your lifestyle as well. Anybody can walk, and walking is a fantastic form of activity.
And there's a lot of people that have had success from the 30-day challenge that we recommend early on in these episodes.
It never ceases to amaze me. I mean, some people have said that 30-day challenge, and what is the 30-day challenge? If you're just popping in here and you haven't heard some of the earlier podcasts, 30-day challenge is walking 30 minutes a day for 30 straight days. With
no breaks
stopping.
In between.
Right. So vacations, you're walking. Snow, you're walking.
Yes.
It doesn't matter. You're finding a way to walk for your 30 minutes for 30 straight days. It's changed people's lives. It doesn't sound like it should, but it has.
Now, I love it because it's so simple, but it really, really works.
Right.
So simple.
And an argument could be made, if you're not in a big rush to really lose the fat and start and activate the fat gene, the fit genes, you might an argument could be made for doing the 30-30 challenge, just to get in the habit of moving, get in the habit of building exercise and activity into your life. right? And that's kind of like the brain food aspect of it. It's kind of shifting that mentality that you've got to do everything all at once. That's one part of that focus on the brain food. It's part of shifting our expectations. Well, you don't have to shift everything all at once. In fact, most of the evidence suggests that shifting one or two things at a time is better than shifting everything all at once.
Yes, it's more manageable.
So let's talk some tangibles of diet. Okay. And before you kind of get into some of the dietary things, and we talk about this in some of the earlier podcasts, but there are five kind of things that I think we need to really shift about how we look at diet. Number one, we must build a lifestyle that we enjoy eating. We don't, you know, losing weight and burning fat isn't about making a dietary lifestyle where you hate all the food that you eat.
Right. Life is way too short for that. I'm not even about that.
You know, you love your Cinnabons from time to time, right? You know, I love my Oreo McFlurries from time to time.
Yes.
So, you can incorporate those things in a strategic way that may actually serve you, that may actually improve your results, right?
Absolutely, yes.
So
with the right method and getting everything in there, you can certainly work those things into a healthy lifestyle.
So how, Blythe, how do you recommend that people live the healthy lifestyle and still enjoy the foods that they eat?
Well, I always recommend that people plan a day. Maybe there's a birthday of a family member coming up or something. You know, plan a day that you are going to allow yourself to enjoy something guilt-free. So you're going to do it. You're going to enjoy it. You're going to love every minute of it. And then when it's over, it's done. And you planned it and you're okay with it. And there's no looking back. So part of the guilt. Yes, absolutely. Part of the guilt that's associated with going off plan, but eating something that you wouldn't want to eat, you know, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Let's just say a Cinnabon, for example, since that is my vice, one of my vices. If I plan to have one, well, that kind of motivates me to eat a little healthier in the couple of days leading up. And then maybe I know on Friday after work, I'm going to go get a Cinnabon. And then right afterwards, I want to make sure that I enjoyed it, had a great time. I might have a bellyache because I ate the whole thing. But you know what? I'm just going to let it go, enjoy the process, and get right back on board tomorrow, knowing that, again, whenever I want or need to do that, that I will allow myself to be able to do that. And, the stressing out about it or the guilty feelings, I find that triggers like a cortisol release, like a stress hormone that if I worry about what I've done, then I feel like I hang on to that so much longer than if I just allow it to happen and I'm okay with it.
It's like your perceptions of food will dictate how your body processes and handles that food. And
Absolutely.
There's good evidence to support that view.
Yes. You know, like you smell a donut and you say one bite of a donut and it's an inch on the hips or whatever that saying is, that cliche saying. But you can smell a donut and get an inch on your hips. I mean, there really is a response depending on the way you view your food. And it's important to have that healthy relationship to where you allow those things into your life. Because if you feel like you're always going without, well, then you're always pining for more, right? So if you have this agreement with yourself where you can actually enjoy those things whenever you say you can. Now, we need to, you know, be rational here. And it's not 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. But you're going to allow yourself some leeway like that, then this can certainly be done. And who wouldn't want a lifestyle where you feel good every morning waking up because you ate healthy the days before, and then every once in a while, you get to have a treat.
And you get to enjoy the treat guilt-free.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, and then number two, I'd say slow down. We all got to slow down when we're eating because it goes well beyond just this idea that it takes time for your stomach to process the food and tell the brain that you've had something to eat. There's just something that happens when people slow down when they eat to their whole metabolism. And, without getting into the science of that, just know that if you can just stop yourself from speeding through your meals, if you can just turn the TV off, you know, and just relax and actually pay attention to what you're eating, that alone can make a major impact on how much weight you lose, specifically how much fat you lose.
Mm-hmm. Mindful eating.
Yep, mindful eating.
Yes.
And number three is you know, I'm a little bit biased here because I am a nutritional pharmacist and I am a huge fan of supplementation, but I think everybody needs to supplement with some sort of nutrition to their diet. John Berardi, who is he's the main guy at Precision Nutrition. You know, one of the things he says is the first thing he has his clients do is just start taking one fish oil a day. Okay. And that's the first habit that he has people develop is take a fish oil, a capsule of fish oil every day. Why? Because the omega-3 fatty acids do improve the metabolism. But beyond that, it's a very simple habit that takes you one step closer to that healthy person. And it's kind of that linchpin, that first step you take every day is taking your supplements. And I like getting on a good quality multivitamin. I like getting on an omega-3 fatty acid. Fish oil specifically seems to be most beneficial for people, for vegetarians. They now have EPA DHA products that are vegetarian. And so you could use those in its place. So, you know, getting your smoothie in the morning with your spirulina and your omega-3s in there, that may be your supplement for the day. But supplement your diet to make sure that you're getting what you need just to be able to maintain at least a minimal level of health, but taking it one step further into the optimal range, so you're getting the optimal nutrition that you need to be able to have a fully functioning metabolism.
So for somebody just starting out and they're not sure where to start, you would say, what type of multivitamin would you recommend?
There are a lot of them on the market. A very simple one I like is by Life Extension Foundation. It's a two-a-day multi. You take one with breakfast, one with dinner. And if you're just getting started, just take one fish oil with breakfast and one with dinner, so you're having one of each. Women could add an extra calcium magnesium formula, like a bone-building formula, with breakfast and dinner as well. So you basically get the three things that make up the foundation. Very simple. Nothing too extravagant there. You can certainly build upon that, but it's a good starting point for people.
Okay. That's good advice.
Good. And number four, variety actually is a little bit overrated. In fact, the research suggests the more variety you have in your meal, the more you will have a tendency to eat. So you might consider just simply decreasing the variety within the meal. And I'm not saying decrease the variety within your life and within as far as what you're eating in your life, but within a specific meal, if you have five or six different flavors in that plate, the evidence is pretty clear that you're going to eat more than if you had two, maybe three different flavors on that plate.
Okay. Interesting. Yes.
Number five. Monitor what you're eating, Blythe. And you mentioned this when we were kind of texting back and forth about what we're going to talk about. Talk a little bit about that.
I find it kind of like the 30-day challenge. You know how you just find something so simple to be such an aha moment for people. There is something about writing down what you eat and finding out the nutritional value of it. Now, I'm not talking, you know, writing down the whole nutritional label. I'm talking about going on and you know, CalorieKing.com, MyFitnessPal, LiveStrong, any of those websites will tell you what like 4 ounces of chicken breast is made up of, like what the caloric content is, you know, made up of. And it's such a big lesson for people when they realize or they recognize the amount of processed sugars, processed foods, crackers, cereals, all of these things. They just don't understand the nutritional value of these foods. And once they start to recognize, then they know how, it's deep-rooted, a know-how to make healthier choices, to steer them in the right direction. So instead of jumping the gun by saying, well, I want you to eat this way, you know, everybody thinks that they want a diet plan that tells them to eat one way or another.
Like a meal plan, if you will.
Yeah, like a meal plan. And the reality of it is you need to look at the foods that you currently eat and fit those into your own type of a meal plan. So I find it a total learning curve for people once they start logging their food. You don't have to do it forever. A week, 2 weeks, maybe a month. You know, if you're working with me as a one-on-one client, it's important that you do it every day for a month, kind of like the 30-day challenge. You know, you make a habit of it. And then it becomes a little less cumbersome once you get used to logging your food. But you learn so much about food by simply doing that. It will stick with you forever.
In fact, some German research found that even if you just snap a picture of your food before you eat it, that alone is enough to change the way you eat.
Yes.
And it's not about the getting to the exact calories. I think nobody can really get to the exact calories. But you'll see the trends. You'll see like you said, you'll see, well, wait a minute. This little bit of food has this much energy in it.
Right.
And I could be eating this instead. And it's so much more food.
Yes.
And I'll feel much more full from that and be satiated for so many more hours.
Yes.
And you start to make those shifts. You start to say, well, wait a minute. This is ridiculous.
Big aha moments that change your life forever in a positive way.
Right. And you say you don't have to record your food forever, but I'm willing to bet that if people did, they would have much more success.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't take long. Again, you don't have to count every calorie, but even just the act of writing down what you're eating, even if you don't have the calorie information, is enough to make a positive impact.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, good. So those are my 5 points on diet.
And there's so many apps out there to make that stuff easy now. Guys, it's actually more simple than you think.
Yeah. And so some specific recommendations for a diet. You know, those are kind of the intangible aspects of the diet. But let's give some more specifics. So if somebody were starting right now, mm-hmm. I would say, okay, look, the dietary recommendations I'm going to make for you are not perfect. But on any level, they're generic recommendations for you to start with. And then you're going to have to tweak it and build from there.
Yes.
And that's such an important point because I don't want people to take what I'm about to say here as the end-all be-all. It's just a starting point to see how your body responds to this. Not only how your body responds, but how does your mind respond to it? Because
right.
even if you lose weight following these recommendations, but you feel so anxious because you feel like you need to eat a slice of pizza, but you're not going to let yourself because mm-hmm. they don't fit into these recommendations. Then there's a mismatch there that
yes.
won't let these results last forever. And
yes,
so we've
got to get down to the root of that problem.
Right. Yeah. Yes. I say, you know, it's not enough for something to be a biochemical match for the body. It also has to be a cultural match as well.
Yes.
And that is the magic of finding your fat loss formula. When you discover the things that work biochemically with your body, but simultaneously fit into the culture and the subculture of your life, that's when magic happens. That's when results become lifelong. Okay. So some recommendations. Number one, I'd say if you're sedentary, if you're not exercising a lot, I'd say stick to 3 meals a day. If you are exercising a lot, go to 5-6 meal plan. You know, you hear people say, well, it's always got to be 5-6 meals. But the truth is, if you're not moving, if you're sitting at a desk all day long and you're getting 20 minutes of activity a day, you probably shouldn't be eating 5 or 6 meals per day.
Right.
Even smaller
meals.
Right.
You don't need to force feed yourself. Right.
Right. You can get away with 3 meals a day. You can let that time in between those meals allow the body to burn and exist on the fat of the body rather than on the nutrients within the food. And then you can build from there. You might say, well, you might do that for a week and say, ooh, I'm famished. I need to eat. And mm-hmm. then you might say, okay, well, let me just throw a snack in between lunch and dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll tweak that way and you'll wait and see how your body responds to that. That might be enough for you to get results without feeling like the rubber band is being stretched too far.
Right. And that's a totally simple thing to do. Now, make sure when you're implementing that snack that it's something that your body will use.
Right.
Right. So not having like a sugary processed snack on your way home or going through a drive-through, you know, somewhere between lunch and dinner. It's got to be a healthy, protein-rich snack.
Right. And then the next point, and keep in mind, this is just if somebody were say, how do I start over? I would say try to keep your starch, your carb intake to between 60 grams and 110 grams. And yes, that's a wide range, but we're all different people. So some people can really handle 110, even 120, 130 grams of carbs and still lose weight, whereas other people may only be able to handle 50 or 60 grams of carbs a day. So it
right.
really is very dependent on you. We call that your carb tipping point. How many carbs can you consume without having a negative consequence to your health and your weight?
Right. And if you have too little, you know, you might find yourself really either having severe cravings at the end of the day for something that has carbohydrates in it. I know when I have a low carb day or, you know, if I'm getting ready for a bodybuilding show or something, I drop my carbs really low. Then the first thing that happens is I get cravings later in the day. So if you find that that's something that's happening, I find this common among my clients. Then if say you started off at 60 grams of carbohydrates and that's what your carb tipping point was going to be, well, then you bump it up maybe by 20 grams and you end up fine in the afternoons. Well, that is where you need to reside.
Right. That is your carb tipping point. Mm-hmm. That's the perfect spot for you, at least right now. And that can change. As you get more active, you might you need to add more carbs. As you build more muscle, you might say, hey, I can enjoy 10, 20, 30 more grams of carbs, and it doesn't seem to impact my weight negatively. Right. So, you know, as we're talking about this, just keep in mind, this is generic. This is just a starting point, and you've got to build from there. And then the third point, and this is the last point that I have on here because we're trying to keep it pretty simple and straightforward, is drink a ton of water. You know, and diet soda is not water, right, Blythe?
Right. Water is water. Naked water, ice water, water with a little bit of green tea, maybe if you like tea. But water is water. The water that you mix with other things, no, it's people are always trying to find a way out of drinking water, but water is water. And I usually recommend 3 liters of water at a minimum. And that takes a while for some people to build up to. And for others, you know, they may be drinking 2.5 liters and they just add another 0.5 liter and voila, they lose another couple of pounds.
It's true. And, you know, here's a interesting little tidbit that most people don't realize. But when we do up our water intake, it actually causes our body to excrete more cortisol and cortisone. So if you're a stressed out person and you start to drink more fluid, it actually causes your kidneys to want to get rid of more and more of that cortisol and cortisone, the stress hormones that can cause problems with weight loss, specifically around the gut area, around the belly area where people have a lot of problems. So drinking more water, especially during times when you're stressed, will help to get rid of some of that excess cortisol.
It's an interesting tip.
Extra little tidbit.
Yeah.
So those are the 3 points that I have. Do you have any other points on diet that you would add at this stage in the game? This is the stage where they're just getting started.
Yes. I have one little tip. If you are not sure what to eat, okay, if you really don't know what to eat, anything in Mother Nature's packaging is superior to anything that comes in a can or a box or a jar. So anything natural is superior to something that is packaged.
It's true. You know, a lot of people, they say, well, you know, I don't want to eat too much fruit because it'll stall my weight loss. But the reality is you're eating ice cream every night. You know, you shouldn't be worrying about whether or not fruit is going to stall your weight loss if you're tearing up the ice cream. Perhaps you can eat the fruit in place of the ice cream.
Right, absolutely. Or you can maybe look at the type of fruit that you're eating. You can delve into that a little deeper and pick something that's a little lower glycemic. Berries are a great one to go for.
A little bit of a lateral shift, if you will.
Yes.
And so those are my points. You know, the final thing that I would say is don't ignore the non-caloric causes of weight gain, which are lack of sleep, too much stress. Those two things are major factors for people.
And it's rampant.
It's rampant.
So many people, over 50% of the people that I work with, it's lack of sleep.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll tell you, Blythe, I have met people who their entire issue is lack of sleep.
Yeah.
And once they start getting sleep, their cravings disappear.
Yes.
You know, they start to lose weight and they sit around scratching their head wondering why. Well, there's a whole lot of metabolic things that go on in the body when you get plenty of sleep, especially when you go from not getting enough sleep, like Daddy Ray over here, to getting a ton of sleep or getting sufficient sleep to keep the body healthy. And it seems around seven and a half hours seems to be the point where you get the majority of the benefit. Let's say 98% of the benefit of the sleep is seen in the first 7.5 hours of sleep. So if you can just get that amount, then you'll do great. If you're starting with 5 hours of sleep and you say, Ray, I may be able to give you an extra 0.5 hour. I'll take it. I'll take whatever I can get.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can always build upon that, right?
Yeah.
All right. Any final points before we close for the day?
I don't really have anything else that I want to add as far as this podcast goes. I can't wait till we do another one.
All right. Well, let's schedule it. And, you know, we'll see you at the next episode of Cut the Fat Podcast season. What season are we in now? We're in like season 6?
Well, yeah.
Who knows?
We've been doing this for 6 years.
We'll say season 6.
Okay.
All right. Sounds good. All right, you guys. We'll see you next time here on Cut the Fat Podcast.
Bye, guys.
something new. A little twist to what you know is true. You're in a cloudy hole, a shit don't touch you. And you feel a place to pop the buses blue. And all the sticky things that keep me silent are the same things that make your safe world violent.